Good evening. This is Mae Bressel on KAZU FM, Pacific Grove, California. It is August the 12th, 1983. This is tape number 614. There is always a lot of interest, continuous interest, in the assassination of John Kennedy, and I have so much material I could do one program a week for 2 or 3 years on that subject. So this evening, I'm going to do 1 hour on the Kennedy assassination and try to do more every week. As I said before, going back to the middle of this year, instead of waiting until the anniversary of Kennedy's death, I'm doing broadcasts every single week that involve people who were part of the Kennedy assassination. And if you take the broadcast and or have the sheets that go with the broadcast, you'll see always the bibliography and sources of material goes to the Kennedy assassination. That's how I began my research in the first place. But there are always letters and orders for tapes specifically of the Kennedy murder. So this evening I'm going to do 1 hour on that and some material that I may be of interest to you, an analysis of some important books on the Kennedy assassination and also the way the government wrote about the researchers when they began to investigate them in 1976. Starting in 1963, President Lyndon Johnson was concerned right after the murder about the killing of Kennedy. But by 1976, the FBI and CIA had a full-scale attack ready for writers and researchers on the Kennedy assassination. Before we get into that, I just want to mention what we were talking about or sharing just a year ago this week. September 13th was the broadcast, number 562. That particular broadcast had to do with the Vatican connections to Permandex. Permandex was the Italian organization set up as the funding operation for the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the links of the Vatican to Permandex. Last year, there were those articles in Wall Street Journal, August 24th, 25th, and 26th, on the Nugenhand Bank, and extensive material on the Nugenhand Bank that I mentioned several weeks ago. We have to update. The Vatican connections, the U.S. military, the Defense Department of this country to drug connections was taking place last year. Calvin Simmons, the black conductor, fell out of his canoe and died upstate New York, and I thought that was an outright murder, probably with a camera. These girls were taking, standing on the shore, or women, I don't mean girls, taking pictures which we never saw. He was at a dinner party at Lake Placid where people from the State Department were there. He was a Foreign Service agent and his wife and another person, a woman who was an ex-ambassador from somewhere, never identified. In the years since Calvin Simmons died, he was the black conductor from Oakland, probably the most brilliant musician, a black musician in the United States today, if not the world, for classical music. Now that he is dead, Oakland has replaced their symphony with a new conductor. He came from North Carolina, went to a Catholic school, specializes in Haydn and Wagner, German music, and Mr. Simmons never did make the New York Philharmonic or become part of that very white, Anglo-Saxon, snobbish symphony, string quartet, German music crowd. There's no way that a black conductor from Oakland was going to make it. And he didn't make it. It's been a year since he died, and he's been replaced with a perfect profile of the kind of person that the symphony societies would like to see in Oakland. I talked about the skin competitors and the brief mention of the car crash that Mary Martin was in and Janet Gaynor, and Mary Martin's close friend was killed in that crash, and how the driver was yelling Jews and Jews and was violently anti-Semitic. Mr. Cato was sentenced this past year, I believe, to 2 years in jail. He came from Denver, Colorado. The car was used by somebody, a Mueller, Mr. Mueller from Denver, Colorado. And I mentioned the competition of the face creams and the involvement of Mary Martin, who was currently at that time pushing for Magnan's, iMagnan, a cosmetic, and the possible competition between the world cosmetic market and the fact that a Jewish doctor was the one who had made this face cream that Mary Martin was selling. In this past year, her own son, Larry Hagman, has moved out of his house that he rents in Dallas with death threats. The man whose home he was renting, Mr. Kyle, K-Y-L-E, was killed in Bel Air, California, so that there's still problem with those families, and the marketer of the one of the face creams, Princess Marcella Borghese, B-U-R-G-E-S-E, was a founder of a cosmetic company and also part of the Borghese family that were involved with Permandex and the murder of John Kennedy. If you don't have the broadcast, it may sound a little complicated to you, but we spent quite a bit of time last year on the Kennedy assassination and the Vatican and Permandex. I also had an outline a year ago with dates, important dates. If you don't have that broadcast, you can get those tapes. Quotations from the book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, by Paris Flammond, and the outline of the way the Vatican became fascist and fell into the group that became the assassination teams. Very closely tied to the Vatican was this entire mafia, religious, a lot of industries, cars, Agnelli, the Fiat, the car people, the hotel people. There are a lot of multinational corporations closely linked to the Vatican, closely linked to those people that wanted John Kennedy murdered, and a good description of them and the people that are in the news today is in the book Kennedy Conspiracy by Paris Flammond. I'm going to be discussing books on the Kennedy assassination, and I don't have Paris Flammond's book down. I should, as one of the very top books. It's hard when you have to decide, limit 6 or 7 books on a particular subject that you think are the most important, and just because of space, Flammond's book is not on that list, but it really should be, and I should update that list because of the links to Permandex. He's the only writer that really gets into the subject of Permandex, and it's in the news today with so much on the Vatican and Licio Gelli and Klaus Barbie's links to the Vatican, and that was just a year ago this week. Now, the Philippine government has set up a Warren Commission to investigate the murder, the political murder of Mr. Aquino down there, and I'm going to do one broadcast maybe next week or the week after on the comparisons to the murder in Manila of Benigno, B-E-N-I-G-N-O, Aquino. Most of you can spell it right now. He's getting a lot of attention in the news. I'll compare it to the Kennedy assassination on the kinds of people that were murdered, and also the way it is covered up in the national headlines to get so much attention. Now, incidentally, the Philippine government has been noted to have spies in this country that can kill or blackmail people who do not like Mr. Marcos in the Philippines. And the U.S. intelligence agencies have reported that there are military teams here in the Philippines that single out certain persons to harass who don't like the government over there. With the time of the Tylenol scandals, I went into various deaths that appeared to be suicide or coincidental cyanide deaths. And one was in Philadelphia, a student at the university there. And John Judge was the person who did research on that case and found out that he was a Philippine dissident who was against Marcos in the Philippines, who died of what was supposed to be a cyanide suicide or something, cyanide in his medicine cabinet that he took. And he was a dissident from the far-off Philippines working right in the United States. Cyanide is still a very good Nazi tool of silence. Now, this past week, you've been reading a lot about Martin Luther King and the marches, and I Have a Dream speech and the rallies, and the summary of those meetings, in essence, the most important thing for me was the lack of a leader. The San Francisco Examiner, August 25th, has an article, "The Movement Needs a Leader and Badly," and the role of the FBI, according to their own memos, they wrote them, I didn't, is that we have to replace Martin Luther King, that they would select a leader because they're the leader that was by charisma or circumstance or history selected, a Gandhi or a Kennedy or a Martin Luther King. These kind of people don't come on around very often, so you can split it with a lot of people that come up from behind. The next elections, it could be Eugene McCarthy, and George McGovern wants to run, and Mr. Anderson wants to run, and Jesse Jackson, and you split it with a whole bunch of nerds. They're nothing but a bunch of individuals that can't do anything for society, collectively or otherwise, who don't have the charisma to get off the ground. That's why they're alive. And they are not the kinds of people like Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King or John Kennedy or Gandhi or Aquino who can write speeches and mean what they say and die for what they mean. We're talking about the real need for leaders. Marlon Brando was on television at the time of the meetings last week or the week before for Martin Luther King, and his opinion was the tragedy was not having leadership, that he'd been in the early marches. He'd been in Washington in April when Dr. King was there, and 6 or 7 days later, Dr. King was murdered. And he was saying the not only the sense of loss of the person, but there are no leaders around to help solve the problems for which these leaders emerged. That when they die, it seems that they just simply can't pass on the ideas to the people around them, and it is a real tragedy. Now, a while back, oh, I don't know how long ago, maybe a year ago, I was asked to do an article for We or Playgirl, one of the magazines, it wasn't Playgirl, it was We or Penthouse, on the most important books on John Kennedy. I think it was for the anniversary of Kennedy's death last year. And I was paid for, the proposal was given to me, I was paid to do the story, and then the magazine folded up. I think it was We that was consumed by Penthouse and went out, or they changed hands, and it was never printed. But I did a lot of work on it, spent several months on it, and it's very pertinent now. And I thought I would share that material with you the way I saw it then, because just a year ago wouldn't be much different than the way I perceive books now, except I would add Paris Flammonde's name to this list. They didn't want me to have a long list of books on the assassination. In fact, I stretched it further than they asked me. They wanted 6 to 7 books, the most important books on the murder of John Kennedy. If you were just starting out, or you wanted to give your children or family a gift, or schools a gift, what 7 books would you have that describe the murder of John Kennedy? And I went to 8. And 9 would be Flammonde, but that wasn't what they wanted. But on my own, I can say that many, and I'll tell you what they were in the order that I had them and the way I see it, as I say, perceive it today. 1, Oswald Assassin or Fall Guy, written by Joachim Joosten, Joachim, Joesten, published in New York by Marzani and Munsell in 1964. The second book was Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane. And I'll give you the reasons why I selected these books, but I'm telling you what they were now. The Rush to Judgment. I don't like Lane, but it was a good book, and it opened up a lot, and for that we can be grateful. I sneaked in 4 books as 1, Forgive My Grief, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4 by Penn Jones, Jr. That was considered as 1 book, published 1965, 1967, 1969, and 1974, Penn Jones in Midlothian, Texas. The 4th was a document addendum to the Warren Report, published by David Lifton, who came out last year, the year before last, with Best Evidence, which was not a good book. Document addendum is the actual meetings of the Warren Commission members, and you just can't beat that for script. That's Sightex Publication, Sightext Publications, California, 1968. It's out of print, but David gave permission for Tom Davis at Research or me to copy that book, and we really should be getting those out to you. Farewell America by James Hepburn, that was a pseudonym. It was a accumulation of people in the intelligence community living in Paris who were investigating the attempted murders of Charles de Gaulle. Many of you saw there's been the fictionalized story of the assassination of de Gaulle, and you may have seen the movies on that. There's been several movies on it, The Day of the Jackal and other takeoffs on that event. The people investigating the assassination attempts on de Gaulle came into the organizations and the companies and corporations that were behind the murder of John Kennedy and the intelligence agencies. So it's a compilation of authors from the intelligence community, and it was put out in Canada. Who's Who in the CIA by Julius Mader, M-A-D-E-R, from Germany in 1968. The Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal, with the pseudonym William Torbett, privately published in Dallas in 1970, available in reprint in Aptos, California, that you can get that now. And then the last book I had down was The Assassination of JFK by Coincidence or Conspiracy, Bernard Fensterwald, Jr., Zebra Books, 1977, New York. It would be a toss-up between Paris Lamone, but he has pictures of people, very important mobsters, and again, I don't like Fensterwald, and he's part of the CIA, but the book is valuable for a lot of the cast of characters. It's very important to know the cast of characters. Now, 20 years have passed since the murder of John Kennedy. There, at the present time, there are over 250 books alone about the circumstances of his death, or the four murders. There were four murders there. The murder of President Kennedy, and then Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit a little while later at noon, then the lone suspect, Lee Harvey Oswald, and then Oswald's assailant, Jack Ruby. So there are actually four deaths to cover in, and I don't think of it as just the Kennedy death. So in selecting a book, again, it had to go back to which books are important when you think of four deaths, not just the president. Now, the government's conclusions were published in a single volume, and there's a lot of confusion for new students or new listeners, and a whole new generation is growing up with this. It is called The Warren Report, and that's over 500 pages. And this was what the Warren Commission, a select team put together by Lyndon Johnson, concluded, that Lee Harvey Oswald acted as the lone assassin and there was no conspiracy. Then, in order to support that conclusion, they published 26 volumes of witness testimony and exhibits, 16 volumes of witnesses that were interrogated, and the remaining of the 26 was for the exhibits upon which the testimony was based. So those 26 volumes were made available from the government printing office in 1964. They printed only 800 copies. They had a cutoff, obviously, because by the time people would catch on, there'd be too many people reading it, and you can get it at libraries, you can't take it home. So that Warren conclusion that Oswald did alone was based on 26 volumes. And the testimony and the exhibits, those 26 volumes, did not support the conclusion of the Warren Report. So private investigators and writers and researchers had a field day, and this caused a whole generation of people who would prove and delve into these various conspiracies. If Kennedy's assassination had one purpose, it may have been to open up the field of muckraking and exposing, because from the time of World War I up through and to Kennedy's death, so many, many crimes and murders were done and covered up. But this might have been the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, from all this information, from these over 250 books, you have to have some starting point. And I put the books that I listed and read to you in some chronological order also. The first one by Yostin, that was the very first book to come out. It paved the way for every other book to follow. Now, he was a well-known writer. He lived in Nazi Germany. He was forced to flee. He went to Sweden. He was kicked out of Sweden and sent to Denmark. The Nazis came to Denmark, and then he left, went back to Sweden, got married, and went, took a trip to various countries and landed in the United States. After the war, he went back to Germany, and as soon as Kennedy was murdered, he flew right out to Dallas, Texas, because he realized the similarities between the murder of John Kennedy and the murder of first hundreds and then millions in Nazi Germany. So Justin published in Europe exposés, nonfiction exposés of European scandals. He is the expert, more dedicated, say, than Jack Anderson and some of the other people. There aren't many like him, even Anderson. But he was an expert on it, and as he survived the Nazi era, he knew all the deceptions and the murders of politicians. And he recognized, as I say, the similarities between the president's death and the others that he already documented. So his book claimed that Lee Harvey Oswald was completely innocent of shooting John Kennedy. He didn't say he was totally innocent. He said he had to be working for the United States government, such as the CIA and FBI. But in the end, he was a decoy and he was expendable, just as the fellow that shot Aquino out at the airport in the Philippines. He's a decoy. They don't brag about how well-trained he was as a marksman or in the military or whatever. They didn't even identify his name, let him out the airfield rotting in the sun. But Oswald could be a decoy and could be shot down then and taken in while the other people leave town. So assassin or fall guy was the first comparison of a historical event, fascism in Germany with fascism in the United States. And the important thing about this book is that there had been studies of the Lincoln assassination that were really relegated to being a hobby, and people recreate the battlefields and the Civil War and so forth. But the United States had this 1,000-day president who was gunned down, and the suspicions were rampant that the conspiracy existed. So he went back to Germany, the home of all this. That was interesting because Rudolf Wenneker, a German, is in charge of writing the Warren Report later. He goes back to Germany, and based upon a legitimate fear of fascism that it would rise up again in the United States, he wrote his book. Now, remember, in 1976, the FBI, according to my FBI document papers, and I can read those to you if you want and share those I have before, began papers on me because I was afraid of fascism in this country. So that was a major contribution of Joston to the element of research, the comparisons, and the state of mind and the expertise he had. There wasn't anything sensational about him. There were similarities he saw, and he was the first one to jump in there and take the situation and analyze it. Now, the next book, Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment, is about the grassy knoll. I make fun of it because Mark and a lot of other researchers I could give you and will in the broadcast on Kennedy, the names of 10 or 12 researchers who are still cutting grass at the grassy knoll, like Bob Cutler. Some of them are counting blades of grass. In fact, I have a joke that this is the joke. One man says to another, why haven't they solved the Kennedy assassination yet? There's so many researchers. And then the answer is, well, they're still counting the testicles on Officer Tippett. The research relegates itself down to some very fundamental counting and adding, and people are still on that grassy knoll. But that doesn't matter. The grassy knoll is where the shooting took place. And Mark Lane wrote Rush to Judgment. He was known in the American public. He'd been a New York assemblyman. He traveled around the United States. He gave lectures on the Kennedy conspiracy. I heard him at Beverly Hills High School arguing with Melvin Belli and the Civil Liberties Union, who compared him to Adolf Hitler, questioning the Warren Commission, the Civil Liberties Union, Mr. Wirin, W-I-R-I-N, who was right with Saran as soon as Saran was arrested for shooting Robert Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel. A few years later, there was a panel, and they all took on Mark Lane, these righteous people, and the Civil Liberties attorney compared him for whatever reason, I can't imagine, but I kept the notes going way back to those days. So long before many other people got into this, Mark Lane was traveling around the country, getting people interested in the fact that there was a conspiracy, and he took this small section and made it famous as the Grassy Knoll. He traveled everywhere, and it's a name that rings a lot of bells to people and will throughout history, just as the Ford Theater and the Abraham Lincoln event. His book dealt primarily with questions regarding the assassination weapons, the witness testimony that was never used by the government, but most important of all were 50 pages of footnotes in which he cited volume and page number from the Warren Commission hearings or the Warren Report. The hearings came out in 1964. Rush to Judgment came in 1966, and book reviewers were putting him down, and the book was put down. The answer is that future writers and students could look for themselves, and it's very important to have indexing. So Joston took the conspiracy and the comparisons of a fallen guy and the way they worked in Nazi Germany and opened this up to us, and Mark Lane took us directly to the grassy knoll and questioned the guns, the Italian Carcana, which came from Rome, and now I realize, reading more and more about that, it goes back to Permandex in Rome, that a particular Italian Carcana that was used to frame him because the first gun was the German Mauser. And he goes at length into all the witnesses there, and it's a very valuable book. The next book that is important is the series by Penn Jones on Forgive My Grief. They're important, as I say, because in those books, he turns us on to the people who were murdered, the immediate witnesses to the Kennedy assassination, to the Officer Tippett shooting, to the events in Dallas and afterwards. In his series of books, Penn still has a newsletter, The Continuing Inquiry, and I wish he would keep The Continuing Inquiry just active with the particular people who were killed yesterday or the day before. There's a lot of news going on, but primary witnesses today are being killed, and what he did was to open this up to the world. Now, Penn Jones Jr. was a former publisher, owner of a newspaper, the Midlothian Mirror, and now he gets out his newsletter, The Continuing Inquiry. You can all subscribe if you want. I can give you the address. He was the first researcher and writer to turn on people to the fact of the continuous murder of witnesses from untimely and unusual deaths. Now, many books were being started to challenge the lone assassin, but Penn had four books, 1965, 67, 1969, and 1974, going on about the people that were dying as the inquiries were going on. And this is a definite pattern. In fact, Penn will have to update in his newsletter the people that have had mental breakdowns while they were doing investigations or afterwards. A fellow called me last week from Toronto, and he was telling me how Sylvia Marr had gone into a mental institution while she was helping Cyril Wecht with his testimony before the House Select Committee that she was in 3 weeks. And Richard Popkin, P-O-P-K-I-N, who wrote The Second Oswald, had a mental breakdown. And Ted Gandolfo had Mark Lane and Dick Gregory over one afternoon in New York, and he called me, he was on the phone, and they were there. And the next day, he was a basket case with Thorazine and Prolaxine and never could really do research. And there's a whole list of people that were put in mental institutions. I have many more, and besides those being killed, we'll have to update the researchers or members of their family, I can speak for that, who got this LSD and medical substances that alter personality. But Penn Jones began right away. He was a Democrat. He was a registered Democrat. He lived in Texas near the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He ran up to the scene of the assassination, and like Yostin, he was Johnny on the spot. He was right there. Mark Lane had flown out right away, too, at the time. So there's no way, there's absolutely no way to ever understand the conspiracies and how they hold together so long. This is 20 years, unless you know who was murdered, who might have given information on what was going on before their murder. It's like Vicky Morgan. If she wants to talk about the cabinet or the senators or the president of the United States, she gets a baseball bat on her head. And then there's a lot of dirty tricks and crimes and illegalities that she knew about that could even go into Johnny Carson, friends of Alfred Bloomingdale and the De Cordovas. And she, with the DeLorean investigation, it was the time then to crack her head open. The important thing about Penn's books was to understand the way people died, going out a window, throats cut, hung in a jail, and study the way they died, the homicides that appeared to be homicides. For example, when Lee Harvey Oswald leaves the book depository, a very good witness said he saw him in back of the building and Sheriff Craig saw him leave the front of the building. Well, the witness who saw him leave the back, that was the story that held for the Warren Commission because he was supposed to then get into a cab and into a bus and then do a cab. Well, the sheriff, Sheriff Craig, who saw him leave from the front, was killed, harassed, and killed. The bus driver was killed. The cab driver was killed. The rooming house lady was killed. Mrs. Roberts, who heard a police car honk, and Oswald in the rooming house come out shortly after. So the work of Penn Jones is monumental in describing the homicides. And as I said, his last book came out in 1974. We should all try to get a list together and update that or put that in the newsletter. Now, the document addendum is something else. There was one book on the Patsies and the comparison to fascism, Yostin's book, The Grassy Knoll by Lane, The Murder of Witnesses by Penn Jones. And a document addendum is the Warren Commission themselves, out of their little sweet mouths. David Lifton went to Washington and went to the National Archives and got minutes of the Warren Commission members. December 5th, 1963, they started. He had 11 meetings transcribed or printed in this book through September 18th, 1964. And if you read the Warren Commission members, they sealed for all time their criminality, their ignorance, the mechanics of the commission. Their lone assassin, lone conspiracy was hogwash. And one of those members went on to become president of the United States. Richard Nixon put Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission representing Republican interests. And when Nixon came out because of the Watergate scandals, Gerald Ford gave the amnesty to Nixon for his crimes, which included a role in the murder of Kennedy with the anti-Castro Cubans. And then Gerald Ford becomes president of the United States. When you hear these commission members discuss criminal matters among each other, you get a view of their falsehoods and lies. This is probably one of the finest books preserved for the history books because it's them speaking. It isn't anybody interpreting. You can't smear the authors. You can't do anything. That is the gang. Alan Dulles of the CIA, and John J. McCloy and Leon Jaworski and Gerald Ford. We'll take a one-minute break and continue more on these books and government papers about the researchers that I think is very basic to what was happening right after Kennedy was killed.